This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. A new report from a La Crosse County group found excessive drinking by community members cost the county more than $100 million. This number includes individual costs that come from risky drinking, like hospital visits and fines from law enforcement. But it also includes costs borne by the community, like staffing first responders and even damage to public property. Joining us to talk about the cost of risky drinking in La Crosse are Catherine Kolkmeyer, Executive Director of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium, Jen Rumbalski, Health Director for La Crosse County, and Brenda Rooney, Epidemiologist at Gunderson Health System and lead author on the report. So this, $100 million cost, that comes from the report, The Burden of Risky Alcohol Use in La Crosse County, that was released earlier this month. Brenda, can you talk about who was involved in putting together this report?
Well, this is the fourth report that we've done as part of the alcohol grant. I worked with an evaluator from the Medical College of Wisconsin, as well as Tracy Herlitsky from CISA-4. And we pulled a bunch of data from very different sources to put this report together. As I said, it's the fourth, so we've been trying over time to get the same data and the same time frames so that we could compare apples to apples over time. And so that's kind of how this report was put together. It was part of our initial grant in 2007. We did our first burden report, and that helped us really work with our strategic plan and where we needed to go. And then over time, it's been kind of looking to see how we're doing, making progress. This is sort of the end of the grant, and so we're kind of putting the bow on the package, so to speak, of how we've done over the last 10 years.
And Catherine, when we talk about risky alcohol use, can you explain what that is and what that includes?
Mostly what we're talking about is binge drinking, and technically binge drinking is four or more drinks at a time for a woman in one sitting, five or more drinks for a man in one sitting. We also define heavy drinking, heavy drinking is considered, what is it, Brenda? It's the
10? One drink a day for women.
That's right.
Women. Every day on the month, mm-hmm. And two for men.
So there's several different definitions that we work with, but we've mostly been talking about binge drinking in this report as being an issue.
And so who is contributing to this problem? Is this just young people, or is it, representative of everyone?
That's one of the things that we asked ourselves at the very beginning. And what we decided is that we need to look at this as a community issue and as a cultural issue, that this is something that occurs throughout the community. This is not a college problem or a bar problem or a downtown problem or any other specific group of people. This is something that's a public health issue that affects the entire community. And so we took that approach from the very beginning.
Yeah, and Brenda, did we see that reflected in the numbers of kind of who, looking at the ages of who's contributing to this risky drinking behaviors?
Just based on the last, the most recent data, binge drinking with middle schoolers is about 2%, so 1 in 50 middle schoolers binge drink. 11% for high school, so about 1 in 10. So 1 in 50 for middle school, 1 in 10 for high school. College, about 1 in 3 college students drink. And then adults, about 28%, or a little over 1 in 4 adults binge drink. And we've certainly seen that. I see that with our employees, and it's not just for young people who didn't go to college or for young folks. It's across the board. And one of the other things that we've seen is that heavy drinking among females is on a significant increase, especially females over the age of 50. And that's alarming because heavy alcohol use over the age of 50 is particularly more harmful and more harmful for women.
We're talking about, who is kind of contributing to this risky alcohol behaviors in La Crosse County. And Jen, do individuals who are contributing to this problem, I wonder if it's common for them to not know that maybe they are kind of included in this risky drinking behavior?
Mm-hmm. I think, we live in a society that's very individual, and we don't realize that we may be one of these individuals in this statistic or these statistics that we're talking about. And the reason why we may drink can be different among varying people. And sometimes it just comes back to a coping mechanism, and it's very connected to mental health. And so, you know, people may not be aware, very likely are not aware that they're part of the statistic. And if they are, at least we've gained awareness. That's the first step. But certainly, you know, we have to just help people understand that there are detrimental effects of binge drinking, not only for your health, but there are also social and economic costs as well.
So this report looked at both the individual costs of risky drinking, but also the community costs. And I wanted to delve into kind of what those look like. So Catherine, I wonder if you can give some examples of community costs for binge drinking and other risky alcohol behaviors.
Oh, well, it's interesting to look at how that number breaks down. The $105 million for the county is an annual cost. So this is every year that it's costing us this much. And that comes to $915 per person. And that's people of all ages, including children. So that's a big burden on a community. A lot of that comes from non-healthcare costs, which is the criminal justice system costs, as you mentioned, the cost of the courts, the cost of law enforcement, the cost of dealing with the legal issues that are related to binge drinking and the problems that ensue from that. Motor vehicle crashes, if you think about all the effort that goes into investigating and cleaning up from and identifying all of the different issues that happen with a motor vehicle crash, and those kinds of consequences, that's a very high cost. The other is healthcare costs. So this is people who are injured, and that was really one of the original things that we looked at with this project is how can we reduce the injuries and deaths that are related to overdrinking. And so that could include falling. I mean, people get very badly injured when they fall when they are intoxicated. That's a big cost in the emergency room, as well as the fights, property damage, not just things that happen in a car, but things that happen just on a one-to-one basis. But a very big cost, and the most significant piece of this cost, is lost productivity. So that's the cost to all the businesses in the area and all of the employers in the area when someone is not performing at work, whether they're either not going into work or they are going into work but are not really present. They're not really doing their work effectively as a result of having a drinking issue at home, having overdone it over the weekend and don't come in on Monday or whatever it might be. But that's really the largest part of the cost, $75.8 million per year in this county in lost productivity due to excessive drinking.
Brenda, I'm sure that is a difficult number maybe to calculate. Like how do you find that dollar amount?
Well, that was based on research that the Population Health Institute and the University of Wisconsin did, and then we applied it to our population. So that's how those numbers came about from a study that was done and reported in 2013. So those were not direct numbers that we did for this study. So again, we're pulling numbers from a variety of different sources. Staggering numbers, though, certainly. And the lost productivity is really, I think, an interesting thing for us all to think about. So we used to talk about the alcohol problem, and everyone kind of assumed it was a college issue. And, you know, even I took the approach of thinking, well, you know, we won't have to deal with it because we're an employer and we get mostly people who are graduated from college, right? But that's not necessarily true because we're seeing it in all of our own employees as well. And so we can't wait and try to fix it when they become our employees. We need to get further upstream and really try to work with the colleges and the college students as well as the high schools because, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily go to college. It's not certainly a college problem. And so it really does make it a community issue that we all need to address.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about risky drinking behaviors in La Crosse and what they cost the community. We're here with Brenda Rooney from Gunderson Health System, Catherine Kolkmeyer from the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium, and Jen Rombowski from La Crosse County Health Department. We're talking about the, you know, cost of lost productivity based on risky drinking in the community. And, you know, because of this, you know, staggering costs we're seeing every year, Jen, I wonder if the county is seeing employers respond to this issue, if you guys are seeing more employers invested in addressing the issue.
Well, in general, I can speak to that wellness initiatives. We have a Well County initiative happening across the county, and La Crosse County as an employer takes very seriously the mental health and wellness of our employees. And that is, we're looking at proactively trying to provide things like the traditional EAP services or employee assistance program services with counseling opportunities, of course, health insurance. But beyond that, looking at providing workout facility, providing activity classes that people can participate in, social connections, looking at massage appointments. Like they don't see the connection, but happy, healthy employees equal productivity and helps to decrease these kinds of risk factors, such as participating in binge drinking.
Catherine, we've heard Brenda talk about how Gunderson is, starting to look at this issue. Jen mentioned the county. Have you heard of other employers in the county looking at this issue or being invested in kind of changing this culture?
I'm not hearing about businesses specifically looking at alcohol as an issue, but certainly looking at and coming up with wellness initiatives within the community. And that's something that's been very important. As Jen mentioned, the Well County program, where you have a lot of businesses who have dedicated themselves to developing a wellness program for their employees. I've seen wellness programs grow. There's been funding available. There's a grant program right now available from the Department of Health Services to help businesses build a better wellness program. So that's something that is really on a lot of people's minds. We've seen clinics being placed out in the community. We're, and hearing talk about trying to get to where people are. There are a lot of efforts to connect people right there in their neighborhoods with services that are available to them, whether it's healthcare related or whether it's sort more of the socioeconomic programs. And this is just these are programs that help people live their lives better and find what they need rather than having to work their way through a complicated system. So I think there are a lot of efforts in a lot of different levels where people are trying to improve the health and the well-being of people in the community.
How could making those services more accessible maybe help change the culture of risky drinking and look at this issue of alcohol use? I mean, I wonder if accessibility can help address this issue.
Well, accessibility is something that we looked at, especially with underage drinking, and that was something we worked on more heavily earlier in the project. But what we found is that when people who develop an issue with binge drinking and with overdrinking as an adult, they usually started very early. And I was surprised to hear that I believe the average age of starting drinking, if somebody ends up having a problem with it later, is the age of 12. So this is something that we have to address very, very early. And when you have a pretty permissive culture in general for alcohol and for drinking and overdrinking, as we do here and we do statewide, then that accessibility is much, much easier for young people and for kids. They see it modeled more often. They see it part of more public activities. They just see it being very, very accessible, and so it becomes normal. And it's been interesting to talk to people from around the country when we talk about some of the practices here. When you talked about how heavily alcohol features into so many public events and how easy it is to get to it, partly as a result of just the history of the state as being a brewing state. I mean, alcohol has been part of the economy of this state for a very long time. A lot of other people are surprised, and it's not surprising then to see that as a state we rank so high in terms of our binge drinking rate, and we're usually either at the bottom or very, very close to the bottom, or at the top, I should say. We're the number one, number two, number three binge drinking state in the country. So when it's part of the culture, it's part of what kids grow up with, it's part of how they incorporate it into their lives, but it's not necessarily part of the culture to talk about how to keep it to a minimum, how to moderate, and how to control that intake.
I definitely want to return to this issue of drinking as part of Wisconsin and La Crosse's history, because I think that is a really interesting issue. But, I want to return to this issue of drinking, kids starting to drink, the age of 12, that's really young. I mean, and Brenda, you mentioned earlier that, 1 in 50 middle schoolers mm-hmm. is exhibiting these risky drinking behaviors.
Right.
I think one of the things that we were really encouraged to see since 2010 is that the rate of binge drinking among high school students has dropped in half. So we've gone from 20% down to 11% in our high school kids. I don't know where our middle school kids have been before. This was the first time we'd ever surveyed our middle school. So 2% of our middle schoolers binge drinking is 2% too many. But it's certainly good to see that it's that low. One thing that we look at is how binge drinking varies by different characteristics or different, you know, and certainly students in high school that are smoking cigarettes or, you know, more likely to get in fights or, you know, things like that are more likely to binge drink. But we also look at some of the positive assets of these kids. And if you have a teacher that cares about you at school or a family member cares or you feel like you belong, you're much less likely to binge drink. I mean, that's a real positive. We've seen that in the past with these surveys, and we've really seen it get stronger. And that's the one thing about the middle schoolers is the middle school students who said that they did not have a teacher that cared about them, those kids were extremely high risk of binge drinking. So, you know, possibly an easier way to identify those kids that really, you know, maybe we need to wrap some additional support around those kids. So,
Jen, do you think that people know that 1 in 50 middle schoolers is binge drinking?
You know, I think about parents in particular, and with the culture the way it is, and unless someone is really educated on this topic, I don't think they do know. I'm a parent myself, and I have young people, you know, nieces and nephews, and I know so much about what drinking can do to the developing brain of a young person, even into their college years. And I don't allow them to drink around me. And I tell them why, and they understand why. And if they choose to drink outside of you know, when they're with me, I just hope that they took something away from understanding why I've told them that I don't think it's a good idea. And I think we just have to, you know, the more we understand about how this impacts our young people and how early it's impacting them, and the fact that having a caring adult, having a family that loves them, having a teacher at school who they can talk to, those are all really important. And when I look at the Youth Risk Behavior Survey for the middle school students, 86% of students reported that they strongly agree or agree that their family loves them. I wish that was 100%. And then 68% of students reported there's at least one teacher or adult in the school that they can talk to. Again, I wish that was 100%. So I think we have some work to do. And we know the research tells us that one caring adult can make all the difference for a young person in not only difficult things that they're going through in their life, but then how they cope with those things and, you know, peer pressure and bullying and those types of activities that they're exposed to, you know, are they able to confidently say no when approached to drink or smoke or engage in any other drug-related activity? Alcohol is a drug. It changes what your brain activity does. And, you know, we as parents, I think especially speaking as a parent, we need to be in the know about that, and we need to encourage our young people to know that that isn't okay right now. When you're an adult, you can make that choice for yourself. Right now, you know, we're your parent, and we make that choice.
Brenda, I just want to return to what you mentioned, that we're seeing you know, the numbers of high school students that are engaging in binge drinking, those have gone down. Mm-hmm. What factors do you think maybe are contributing to that?
It's not real easy to tangle out those. We've done a fair amount of education in the community. I think students are bombarded with a whole bunch of different things coming into them every day, bullying, whether it be other drug use, you know. I think that I've often said, you know, it's different problems at different times. It's sort of a whack-a-mole. And we hit down on the alcohol and it pops up somewhere else. So, you know, it's possible that we're seeing more other drug use and less alcohol use. I hope it's not the case. I don't have those numbers in front of me right now, but I do know that we've seen that in some of the reports that there's more marijuana use or other drug use. But I think that there has been a real focus in that area on health and walking to school and farm to school activities. And so I'm hoping that this current group of cohort of middle school and high school students are going to go into their adult life being much healthier than the last cohort.
That's Brenda Rooney from Gunderson Health System here with us today to talk about the culture around excessive drinking in La Crosse and how community groups are working to change it. Also joining us is Jen Rombalski from the La Crosse County Health Department and Catherine Kolkmeyer from the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Part of this report found that federal, state, and local governments, I believe, cover 40% of the costs from risky alcohol use. And Catherine, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how that maybe impacts the community in other ways when we're funneling a lot of our resources into addressing risky alcohol use. How that maybe takes away from other services.
Well, that's one of the ways that it impacts every person in the community is that everyone who pays taxes is paying for this. So if it's costing governments, local governments, through law enforcement, through the courts, through whatever that mechanism may be, that cost is coming directly back to the people who support it, which is all of us. And so I think that that's something that we need to always consider is that it's not, whenever something is covered by government services, that prevents them from being able to put more money into prevention programs and putting it into something that might help stop the problem. You end up spending a lot more time and a lot more money dealing with the problem after it's happened than you do with preventing it in the first place. And I'm sure Jen could speak much, much more about that, with how that works with the health department and other county departments. But that's generally what we see, is that you end up, and communities do this in general, they end up dealing with an issue after the fact, and we call that a harm reduction approach, as opposed to a preventative approach where you're just cleaning up after it, basically. And that can be very, very expensive, and it doesn't go away because you're not addressing the problem from the very beginning, which is why we try to take more of a prevention approach to this in the first place.
This report also includes, individual costs that are factored into this number, this $105 million that costs the county every year. Brenda, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, what those factors are, those individual costs.
So we have information on hospitalizations and emergency room visits, and so that would be part of the healthcare cost. The numbers have improved over time, so we're seeing fewer hospitalizations and TEC visits, emergency room visits, due to injury, so that's a positive. We also have information on the number of deaths due to alcohol, and the issue there is that that data is very difficult to get because alcohol doesn't usually find its way on a death certificate. So what we had to do was look at World Health Organization's attributable risk, how much of heart disease is attributed to alcohol, and how much of cancers are attributed to alcohol. And we looked at the overall attributable risk for alcohol in our community for deaths. So about 15% of deaths that occur in La Crosse County are from alcohol, if you use those statistics. So fairly significant cost to folks.
I wonder, what, over the years that you've been doing this report, what trends or changes you've seen in those numbers?
Well, one thing, so we talked about the alcohol use rates, but one thing we've seen is a significant decline in citations. So, and specifically, we've seen a huge decline in the underage citations. And what's positive about that is that more of them are occurring at bars and fewer of them at houses, so house parties. Why that's significant is when someone is drinking and they're at a bar, the alcohol is metered and it's less risky at a bar, even if people are drinking all-you-can-drink specials or if they're drinking a lot. When they go to a bar, they're at least it's a bartender who's monitoring the consumption, whereas at a house party, there's really no one professional that's monitoring that. And so we've seen more of these underage citations at bars more recently than where we started in 2009 and 10. So that's encouraging. A slight increase in the motor vehicle crash rate, especially for our 25 to 44-year-olds, but as I said before, decrease in our death rate and our emergency room and hospitalizations.
I think that's interesting looking at the crash rates and citations that come from drinking and driving. And, you know, I wonder, Catherine, if we're hopeful that, you know, services like Uber and Lyft and just kind of the availability of those sorts of services, I don't know, are you hopeful that that's going to have a positive impact on the number of alcohol-related crashes and drinking tickets?
I think it's entirely possible, but again, that's something that happens after the fact that doesn't stop the binge drinking from taking place in the first place. So there, that can help cut down on the crashes and on emergency room rates as a result of injuries, which is a very positive thing. It's not going to change the drinking rate, and that's another argument that sometimes can be made is that the more opportunity you have to drink as much as you want because you got a ride home, then that opens up that possibility that you will. But yes, that's a positive thing to be able to have a ride home. We do have, have been stories about people who have been dropped off at home and nobody makes sure that they make it into the house. And that's been an issue with some of the alcohol-related deaths, even in this area, but also around the region. That doesn't happen very often, but that's something that people need to be careful of. They need to make sure they watch out for their friends. When people go out as a group, they need to make sure that they're all being safe and everybody does make it home. And by making it home, you make it into the house and close the door behind you. That's really important, especially in the winter. But that has been an issue before.
Jen, how do you think we walk this line between, you know, trying to help cut down on the, you know, whether it's alcohol-related crashes and just kind of the you know, negative results of drinking and like Catherine mentioned, maybe enabling some of these risky drinking behaviors?
You know, I think walking that line starts with awareness and understanding what the impact is of alcohol use and drug use in general. When we understand those risks and when we ourselves or when others around us engage in that kind of behavior, what we go into it with then is a better understanding of how to plan and how to be safe if we're going to engage in that kind of behavior. And again, as the caring adult, perhaps in the life of a young person, we have a different understanding and ability to protect the young person. And it's not that we're, you know, on purpose not doing that, but without the true awareness and knowledge of what these drugs can do to our brains and how the impact really can be beyond beyond what we sometimes expect, even with the knowledge that there are hospitalizations and deaths, we still believe that, well, it won't happen to me, or it won't happen to my friend, or I don't want to tell my friend that I won't ride in the car with him or her. And we still make these decisions that can get us into trouble, and at worst case scenario, we can, you know, they cause death and severe injury. So I think it starts with awareness, walking that line. And with that awareness, we'll begin to move from that harm reduction approach that Catherine talks about, being more reactive to the effects of alcohol and other drugs, to being more proactive and really engaging in making sure that every young person has a caring adult and making sure that, really supporting the drinking age because it's there for a reason. That's when young people's brains can handle that a little bit better than under the age of 21. So I think that helps get us more upstream.
Jen Rombalski, director of La Crosse County Health Department, is here with us today to talk about the individual and community costs of risky drinking behaviors in La Crosse County. She's joined by Catherine Kolkmeyer, executive director of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium, and Brenda Rooney, epidemiologist at Gunderson Health System. Coming up, we'll talk about how leaders and the community are working to change the drinking culture. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin.
To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about risky drinking behaviors in La Crosse County. A new report found excessive drinking cost the county more than $100 million a year, between community costs like first responders to individual costs like hospital stays and fines. Joining us to talk about these costs and how La Crosse compares to other counties are Catherine Kolkmeyer, Executive Director of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium, Jen Rombalski, Health Director for La Crosse County, and Brenda Rooney, epidemiologist at Gunderson Health System. Catherine, how does La Crosse County compare to other counties within Wisconsin?
I think that we've been, even though we've been doing better, I think a lot of communities have seen some of these similar trends. But I know there was a study recently that looked at cities all over the country comparing the level of heavy drinking. And it was interesting just to look at how that affected our state. Of the top 20 cities in the country, 12 of them were in the state of Wisconsin. And in one of those reports, we were sixth in the nation, not in the state, but in the nation as a city. The next year, we had dropped down to 10th in the state, which is an improvement, but still, we're the 10th heaviest drinking city in the entire country. That's a problem. That's a big issue. And so I think that compared to other communities in the state, we might be pretty similar, but compared to other communities in the country, we still very much have issues to deal with when it comes to alcohol, and I'm sure that it's very similar with other drugs as well.
Yeah, I was also going to ask how La Crosse County maybe compares to other counties within this, you know, driftless area that we sometimes identify with Minnesota and Iowa.
I'd have to defer to Brenda to see if we have data from specifically from the counties in this region. I'm not aware of trends just because we've mostly been looking at areas that have a larger urban area similar to ours or a little bit larger.
Brenda, yeah, with regards to use, really all we had was ourselves to compare to, except I think we could, with high schools, we could compare to the state average, but not recently, because the state's recent report isn't out. Colleges, we really didn't have other colleges to compare ourselves to. So, you know, I don't know for sure. I think the binge drinking rate certainly in Minnesota has never reached the level that it is in Wisconsin. Some of that is based on policies that were established hundreds of years ago, or 100 years ago. The tax on beer hasn't gone up since 1969. And, you know, just some of those policies, the emphasis of the brewing industry on Wisconsin has really shown a difference in the alcohol behavior between, you know, La Crosse and La Crescent even. You could just started to be able to buy alcohol on Sundays in La Crescent because of the state law that was passed this past year. That's a big change in behavior that could potentially in Wisconsin or Minnesota lead to some additional risky behaviors and more alcohol drinking and consumption.
Jen, do you have thoughts on how, you know, La Crosse or Wisconsin kind of compares to some of our neighbors?
When I look at the county health rankings, for example, Wisconsin and La Crosse share the same percentage of 24% with excessive drinking. The top U.S. performers are at 12%, so they're half of what we are. And while, you know, that doesn't say exactly about the states that are right immediately around us, I routinely hear from individuals coming from other states that they're surprised about the types of events that have alcohol at them, including birthday parties and weddings and events like that that are more family oriented. So, you know, we're twice as high as the top U.S. performers in our state and La Crosse.
you know, there is kind of this historical and kind of cultural aspect to drinking in Wisconsin. Catherine, you mentioned earlier just kind of the role alcohol has played in the economy of our state and especially here locally. I wonder if you could talk more about how that is contributing to maybe some of the risky drinking behaviors we're seeing now.
Well, when you look at a community and a state of communities that are rooted in the brewing industry, then that's the product that you're selling, and that's something that you want to promote to support your region. The more is sold, the more your economy grows in the area. And so the fact that there is a health issue and a health consequence of too much drinking and too much consumption of that particular product, then that becomes a conflict later on. We have seen that just because of our history of brewing as a state and as something that supports our economy, it's become more of the culture of the area. It's more acceptable to drink more. We still have a law here in Wisconsin that doesn't exist in most other states. In fact, I don't know if it exists in any other states at all, where parents are still able to purchase alcohol for their child no matter what age they are. But I think you've seen in the past, too, that taverns are social places. They're places where families will go. They'll bring their children. And so it becomes part of your everyday experience. And like I said, when there's a health consequence to overdoing it, then that becomes difficult. And because you want to support your community, you want to support your tourism, you want to support the economy of a community. But when there is a serious consequence of overdoing it, then that makes it hard. And so what we've been trying to look at when we talk about changing the culture of risky drinking is how can we celebrate this area and celebrate the products of our economy in a way that is safer. And so we've talked with both taverns and festivals in the area. We've talked with schools in the area. We've talked with other groups that are putting on events in the area about not avoiding it altogether necessarily, but doing it in a more safe way. So we've introduced several practices that have been studied nationally that look at how you can reduce binge drinking or reduce access to alcohol. You've seen, obviously, when you go to a bar, or if you go to a festival, you might get a wristband, you're getting ID'd. We have offered training throughout the course of this 10-year project for bartenders to get trained in what's called TIPS training is what it's called. I forget what TIPS stands for, but it's a proven way of learning more about over-serving, about identifying when somebody is intoxicated, about finding ways to safely serve alcohol. And we've tried to share that as well at some of the larger festivals. Oktoberfest has done that with us every year for the past 4 years, and it's been great to see volunteer servers learning a little bit more about that so that they're not helping exacerbate a problem that's already there. And I think we have seen a little bit of a change in the culture here very slowly, and culture change is slow. It takes more than a generation for a culture to change on a lot of issues. So I think that we are starting to see a little bit of a shift. We're seeing more awareness, as Jen said, and I think people are starting to have that conversation a little bit more. How can we do this more safely?
Yeah, Jen, do you have other thoughts on how we kind of change the culture of Wisconsin, you know, like Catherine's talking about, like still celebrating the history of our state with brewing, but without, you know, leading to some of these detrimental effects and results?
You know, from a public health perspective, you really change culture by looking at policy, system, and environmental changes. So this is exactly what this group has been doing over the last number of years, looking at policy changes that can lead us to have less access to alcohol so that when we're engaging in those behaviors, it's easier for us to do so in moderation. You know, things like looking at the bars and the all-you-can-drink specials. While we haven't been successful there yet, it's certainly that conversation is important, and having the conversation leads to change over time. So those are really encouraging pieces to see. And I come from, I've been, the health director in two other counties in the western region of the state. And in all of those years that I was in those counties, they pointed to La Crosse as the place that was really engaging in culture change. So I think what has been going here is very exciting, and it it will lead to additional positive change in the future. Things like having the family zone where families can entertain themselves with the parade at Oktoberfest, for example, without having the access and visualization of the alcohol being present in that area. So those are really, really exciting changes that have already taken place and more to come.
You know, we're talking, mentioning some of the work that the Changing the Culture of Risky Drinking Behavior Coalition has been able to accomplish over the last few years. And Brenda, I know that this group is kind of coming to an end recently. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, why that's happening?
Well, the coalition was put together when we received our first planning grant, and we've been funded to have a coalition and to fund certain evaluation activities and certain educational components. The funding has ended as of July of this year, and part of our intent was to find other folks in the community who could take on and continue to sustain those efforts or to build on them. And so we have been able to do that with a number of our efforts, as already mentioned, the family zone for Oktoberfest. The Boy Scouts have taken that on, and what a natural activity for them to do, all focused on healthy family activities, and so that was a nice fit. Parents who host the whole campaign around not supporting underage alcohol consumption around house parties, that's going to continue with the La Crosse Prevention Network. Social host was one of our focuses for over the last year and a half to 2 years. And we do have social host and passed in all of our municipalities. Unfortunately, the state has done some things recently to make those kind of null and void. And so we're waiting for the state to pass a new policy, which will hopefully happen yet this year, that would social host back on the table for us. And then the responsible beverage server training, which is really an ongoing, it never ends. We need to, you know, bartenders, new bartenders are working every day and they need to be trained. And the police department has really stepped up to the plate on that. So we're really trying to look for ways to get these things continued. Along the way, we did so much education of our leaders, in a lot of our municipalities. I think that the burden report is there to educate as well and to kind of, you know, show the leaders that are making policy decisions to see what issues there are.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about risky drinking behaviors in La Crosse and what they cost the community. We're here with Brenda Rooney from Gunderson Health System, Jen Rombalski from the La Crosse County Health Department, and Catherine Kolkmeyer from the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium. And as we mentioned, the Changing the Culture of Risky Drinking Behavior Coalition is coming to an end this year. And Catherine, I wonder if you feel like this coalition has started to change the culture. You mentioned that you're starting to see, you know, a few signs of that, but have you made an impact?
I think that we have, and like I said, it takes a long time to see some of these impacts. I don't think we can certainly take credit for all of the trends that we're seeing and the declines, but when a culture changes and that takes hold, that continues on without it needing to be prodded, I believe. As the overall opinions of people in the community change, behaviors will change as well. We've been funded for the last 10 years by the Medical College of Wisconsin. They have a program called the Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Program, and also by the Department of Health Services. And they have noted that they are seeing, when they compare to other communities that have been doing work in partnership with them, that we have been making a difference, and that they are feeling that this has been impactful at a community level. I think that when you look at the way people talk about the issue, the way people address it with their children, I'm hoping that is going to start to shift a little bit. We're seeing many conversations around the country and with relation to increasing safety, increasing health, improving the way we interact with each other. All of these things feed together to change a culture and to change the way we think about something, the way we think about whether it's alcohol or drugs or, you know, something that is impactful to our health. It's good to see more conversations related to safety and health.
Brenda, do you feel like the community has been responsive to the work of the coalition, or have you guys been met with resistance?
Well, we have two different sources of data from the community that show that they're supportive of this. One is with the Compass Now community needs assessment that's done every 3 years from the United Way. We've asked about alcohol as a problem in our community. And in 2011, it was seen as the number three problem. And in the most recent survey, it's number eight. So that either means that there are other things that are bigger problems, or that we are making some progress and people are seeing that alcohol use is not as big of an issue. So that's one source of data. The second is that we've done this community perception survey every few years as part of this grant. And we ask about support for different policies and different activities that are alcohol restrictive or trying to control alcohol. And the support for those activities by our community is very high. Examples of like increasing the penalty for drinking and driving is 83% support that. Increasing the minimum drinking age, or enforcing the minimum drinking age of 21, 83% support that. 92% support conducting retailer compliance checks. So really strong support for things like that. 70% of folks that we surveyed were in favor of eliminating all-you-can-drink specials at bars and restaurants. We see the support has remained steady or improved over time. So I think that that's part of the whole, you know, you got to have awareness, first of all, and then you have to have folks engaged in trying to figure out how to solve the problem. And I think we have that in our community. So, I mean, I think those are really good indicators of a change in culture in our community.
Brenda, you're talking about, you know, the public perception of alcohol use as an issue in our community, and that's, you know, kind of gone down a little bit. But, you know, Jen, from someone who looks at public health as the, you know, director of the health department, I wonder what your thoughts are on where alcohol use falls when compared to other public health issues.
Well, you know, if you look at our community health assessment and community health improvement plan, that plan really is the community's plan. And they told us that substance abuse, so that covers everything from alcohol, marijuana, and prescription drugs and opioids and other illicit drugs, tobacco included, that substance abuse and misuse of substances is the second highest problem in La Crosse County, followed by social determinants of health and preceded by mental health. We know the connection between mental health and substance abuse as well. So yes, it is certainly a priority for La Crosse County. And while there has been some amazing work that has been done, this work is not complete. And we have to remember that alcohol and tobacco have been considered gateway drugs and really are something that young people especially tend to engage in prior to moving on to drugs that are even more harmful for them. So, we have to continue to look at this issue and address it. And we have a number of coalitions, including the La Crosse Prevention Network, that are continuing to work on this, especially with young people and preventing even starting drinking alcohol in the first place.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, what are those things that still need to be done on this issue?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we need to continue to work on, there are some really, social host and the Parents Who Host Lose the Most campaigns. Those are really good ongoing campaigns that need to continue, and the La Crosse Prevention Network works on those. In addition, the Heroin and Other Illicit Drug Task Force, while focused on opioids and prescription drugs and other illicit drugs, we recently went through prevention strategic planning. And on the prevention side, we are noticing that in high schoolers that the perception of harm for marijuana, alcohol, tobacco, and prescription drugs is decreasing over time. So one of the activities we want to do is do some focus groups with young people that are in high school to find out why is that happening. Although usage is also declining, the perception of harm is going down as well. So we want to make sure that we don't see the usage go back up. We want to keep it in the declining mode, and part of that is being proactive and figuring out why is perception of harm going down. We need young people to understand that these are not things that most people are doing, and that they can feel comfortable saying no to it.
Catherine, what is the end goal for the community? You know, like, how do we know? Obviously, the coalition is, you know, your work is coming to an end, but, you know, what would be the end goal for these efforts?
I think if we can strike a balance in such a way that it is easier for people to make safe choices, if it's easier for people to be healthy if that's what they choose, and that the use of alcohol is something that is social but not coping. You know, if it's something that is a choice that people make in a responsible way rather than something that they resort to because it's the only way they can get through something that they might be dealing with. And so I think when you talk about it at that level, it's not just addressing alcohol or addressing drugs or addressing mental health. It's addressing the entire community and just the world that we live in. How can we better make our way through life so that we use all of these different things in a responsible and legal way rather than having to make that as a treatment for something else that we're not able to deal with. So finding that balance, I think, is an outcome that we would like to see.
We've been talking with Catherine Kolkmeyer, Executive Director of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium, Jen Rombowski, Director of the La Crosse County Health Department, and Brenda Rooney, Epidemiologist at Gunderson Health System, about the culture of risky drinking in La Crosse County and how community leaders are hoping to change it. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.